Hello there. Welcome to part two of the Anda's Game podcast. Thank you for tuning in again. Alice has done a great reading with this part. That's Alice Taylor of the Wonderland blog, crystaltips.typepad.com. Thank you for so much wonderful email related to part one, and thank you for all the nice email related to the news that I've quit my day job and become a full-time writer. I've just been overwhelmed with a kind of outpouring of well wishes and offers and so on. It's the right kind of problem to have. Although it's been a bit of a problem just trying to find time to write with all of the great news. My folks are in town this week too, so I've been showing them around London. It's eaten up some of my time, but again, it's a good kind of problem to have. Hope you enjoy tonight's installment. Talk to you later.
That was the first of Anda and Lucy's missions, but it wasn't the last. That month, she fought her way through six more, and the PayPal she used filled with real, honest-to-goodness cash. Pounds sterling that she could withdraw from the cash point situated exactly 501 metres away from the school gate, next to the candy shop that was likewise 501 metres away. Anda, I don't think it's healthy for you to spend so much time with your game, her Dar said, prodding her bulging podge with a finger. It's not healthy. Dar, she said, pushing his finger aside. I go to pee every stinking day. It's good enough for the Ministry of Education. I don't like it, he said. He was no movie star himself, with a little pot belly that wore his belted trousers high upon, a wobbly extra chin and two back wings of flab hanging off his upper arms. She pinched his chin and wiggled it. I get loads more exercise than you, Mr. Kettle. But I pay the bills around here, little Miss Pot. You're not seriously complaining about the cost of the game, she said, infusing her voice with as much incredulity and disgust as she could muster. 10 quid a week, and I get unlimited calls, texts, and messages. Plus play, of course, in the in-game encyclopedia, and spell checker, and translator bots. This was all from rote. Every member of the Fahrenheits memorized this, or something very like it, for dealing with recalcitrant, ignorant parental units. Fine, then. If the game is too dear for you, Dar, let's set it aside, and I'll just start using a normal phone. Is that what you want? Her Dar held up his hands. I surrender, Miss Pot. But do try to get a little more exercise, please. Fresh air, sport, games. Getting my head trodden on in the hockey pitch, more like, she said darkly. Exactly, he said, prodding her podge anew. That's the stuff. Getting my head trodden on was what made me the man I are today. Her Dar could bluster all he liked about paying the bills, but she had pocket money for the first time in her life. Not book tokens and fruit tokens, and milk tokens that could be exchanged for healthy snacks and literature. She had real money, cash money that she could spend outside of the 500-meter sugar-free zone that surrounded her school. She wasn't just kicking ass in the game now. She was the richest kid she knew, and suddenly she was everyone's best pal, with hands full of curly-wurlies and dairy milks and Mars bars that she could selectively distribute to her schoolmates. "Go get a BFG," Lucy said. "We're going on a mission." Lucy's voice in her ear was a constant companion in her life now. When she wasn't on Fahrenheit Island, she and Lucy were running missions into the wee hours of the night. The Fahrenheit armourers, non-player characters, had learned to recognise her, and they had the clan's BFGs oiled and ready for her when she showed up. Today's mission was close to home, which was good. The road trips were getting tedious. Sometimes non-player characters or game masters would try to get them involved in an official in-game mission, impressed by their stats and weapons, and it sometimes broke her heart to pass them up. But cash always beat gold, and experience beat experience points. Money talks and bullshit walks, as Lucy liked to say. They caught the first round of sniper/lookouts before they had a chance to attack or send off a message. Andy used the scrying spell to spot them. Lucy had kept both BFGs armed, and she loosed rounds at the hilltops flanking the roadway as soon as Anda gave her the signal, long before they got into bow range. As they picked their way through the ruined chunks of the dead player character snipers, Anda still on the lookout, she broke the silence over their voice link. "Hey, Lucy? Anda, if you're not going to call me Sarge, at least don't call me Hey, Lucy. My dad loved that old TV show, and he makes that joke every visitation day." "Sorry, Sarge. Sarge? Yes, Anda? I just can't understand why anyone would pay us cash for these missions." "You complaining?" No, but anyone asking you to cyber some old pervert? No. Okay then, I don't know either, but the money's good. I don't care. Hell, probably it's two rich gamers who pay their butlers to craft for them all day. One's fucking with the other one and paying us. You really think that? Lucy sighed a put-upon, sophisticated American sigh. Look at it this way. Most of the world is living on, like, a dollar a day. If I spend $5 every day on a frappuccino, some days I get two. Dad sends Mom $3,000 a month in child support. That's $100 a day. So if a day's money here is $100, then to an African or whatever, my frappuccino is worth, like, $500, and I buy two or three every day. And we're not rich. There's crap loads of rich people who wouldn't think twice about spending $500 on a coffee. How much do you think a hot dog and Coke go for on the space station? $1,000. So that's what I think is going on. There's someone out there, some Saudi or Japanese guy or Russian mafia kid who's so rich that this is just chump change for him, and he's paying us to mess around with some other rich person. To them, we're like the Africans making $1 a day to craft. So, T-shirts. What's a couple of $100 to them? A cup of coffee. Anda thought about it. It made a kind of sense. She'd been on halls in Bratislava where they got a posh hotel room for £10, less than she was spending every day on sweeties and fizzy drinks. 3 o'clock, she said, and aimed at the BFG again. More snipers. Pat patted in bits around the forest floor. Nice one, Anda. Thanks, Sarge. They smashed half a dozen more sniper outposts and fought their way through a couple of packs of suspiciously badass brigands before coming upon the cottage. Bloody hell, Anda breathed. The cottage was ringed with guards, 40 or 50 of them, with bows and spells and spears in entrenched positions. This is nuts, Lucy agreed. I'm calling them. This is nuts. There was a muting click as Lucy rang off, and Anda used up a scrying scroll to examine the inventories of the guards around the corner. The more she looked, the more scared she got. They were loaded down with spells. A couple of them were guarding BFGs, and what looked like an even bigger BFG, maybe the fabled BFG 10K, something that was removed from the game economy not long after game day one, as too disruptive to the balance of power. Supposedly one or two existed, but that was just a rumour, wasn't it? Okay, Lucy called. Okay, this is how it goes. We've got to do this. I just called in 3 squads of Fahrenheit veterans and their new apprentices for backup. Anda summed that up in her head to 100 player characters and maybe 300 non-player characters, familiars, servants, demons. That's a lot of shares to split the pay into, Anda said. Oh, ye of little tits, Lucy said. I've negotiated a bonus for us if we make it. 1,000,000 gold and 3 missions worth of cash. The Fahrenheits are taking payment in gold, and they'll be here in an hour. This wasn't a mission anymore, Anda realized. It was war. Game war. Hundreds of players converging on this shard, squaring off against the ranked mercenaries guarding the huge cottage over the hill. Lucy wasn't the ranking Fahrenheit on the scene, but she was the designated general. One of the gamers up from Fahrenheit Island brought a team flag for her to carry, a long spear with the magical standard snapping proudly from it as the troops formed up behind her. "On my signal," Lucy said. The voice chat was like a wind tunnel from all the unmuted, breathing voices. Hundreds of girls in hundreds of bedrooms like Anders, all over the world. Some sitting down before breakfast, some just coming home from school, some roused from sleep by their ringing game-sponsored mobiles. Go, go, go! They went, roaring, and Anda roared too, heedless of her parents downstairs in front of the blaring telly, heedless of her throat lining, a Fahrenheit in berserker rage, sword swinging. She made straight for the BFG 10K, a siege engine that could level a town wall, and it would be hers, captured for her by the Fahrenheits if she could do it. She spelled the merc who was cranking it into insensibility, rolled and rolled again to dodge arrows and spells, healed herself when an arrow found her leg and sent her tumbling, springing to her feet before another arrow could strike home, watching her hit points and experience points move in opposite directions. hers. She vaulted the BFG 10K and snicker snacked her sword through two mercs' heads. Two more appeared, and they had the thing primed and aimed at the main body of Fahrenheit fighters, and they could turn the battle's tide just by firing it, and she killed them, slamming her keypad, howling, barely conscious of the answering howls in her headset. Now she had the BFG 10K, though more mercs were closing on her. She disarmed it quickly and spelled at the nearest bunch of mercs, then had to take evasive action against a hail of incoming arrows and spells. It was all she could do to cast healing spells fast enough to avoid losing consciousness. "Lucy!" she called into her headset. "Lucy, over by the BFG 10K! Lucy snapped out orders, and the opposition before Ander began to thin as Fahrenheits fell on them from behind. The flood was stemmed, and now the Fahrenheit's greater numbers and discipline showed. In short order, every merc was butchered or run off. Ander waited by the BFG 10K while Lucy paid off the Fahrenheits and saw them on their way. "Now we take the cottage," Lucy said. "Right," Ander said. She set her character off for the doorway. Lucy brushed past her. "I'll be glad when we're done with this. That was a bugfuck nutso." She opened the door and her character disappeared in a fireball that erupted from directly overhead. A door curse, a serious one, one that cooked her in her armor in seconds. "Shit!" Lucy said in her headset. Ander giggled. "Teach you to go rushing into things," she said. She used up a couple of scrying scrolls, making sure that there was nothing else in the cottage save for millions of shirts and thousands of unarmed noob avatars that she'd have to mow down like grass to finish out the mission. She descended upon them like a reaper, swinging her sword heedlessly, taking five or six out with each swing. When she'd been a noob in the game, she'd had to endure endless fighting practice, grappling with piles of leaves and other non-lethal targets just to get enough experience points to have a chance of hitting anything. This was every bit as dull. Her wrists were getting tired, and her chest heaved, and her hated pods wobbled as she worked the keypad. "Wait, please, don't. I'd like to speak with you." It was a noob avatar, just like the others. But not just like it after all, for it moved with purpose, backing away from her sword, and it spoke English. "Nothing personal," she typed. "Just a job." "There are many here to kill. Take me last, at least. I need to talk to you." "Talk then," she typed. Meeting players who moved well and spoke English was hardly unusual in game space, but here in the clean-up phase it felt out of place. It felt wrong. "My name is Raymond, and I live in Tijuana. I am a labor organizer in the factories here. What is your name?" "I don't give out my name in game." "What can I call you?" "Carly." It was a name she liked to use in game, Carly, destroyer of worlds, like the Hindu goddess. "Are you in India?" "London." "You are Indian?" "No, I'm a whitey." She was halfway through the room, mowing down the noobs in twos and threes. She was hungry and bored, and this Raymond was weirding her out. "Do you know who these people are that you're killing?" She didn't answer, but she had an idea. She killed four more and shook out her wrists. "They're working for less than $1 a day. The shirts they make are traded for gold, and the gold is sold on eBay. Once their avatars have leveled up, they too are sold off on eBay. They're mostly young girls supporting their families. They're the lucky ones. The unlucky ones work as prostitutes." Her wrists really ached. She slaughtered half a dozen more. "The bosses used to use bots, but the game has countermeasures against them. Hiring children to click the mouse is cheaper than hiring programmers to circumvent the rules. I've been trying to unionize them because they've got a very high rate of injury. They have to play for 18-hour shifts with only one short toilet break. Some of them can't hold it in and they soil themselves where they sit." "Look," she typed, exasperated. "It's none of my lookout, is it? The world's like that. Lots of people with no money. I'm just a kid. There's nothing I can do about it." "When you kill them, they don't get paid." "No, porfa, necesito mi plata." "When you kill them, they lose their day's wages. Do you know who's paying you to do these killings?" She thought of Saudis, rich Japanese, Russian mobsters. "Not a clue." I've been trying to find that out myself, Cully. They were all dead now. Raymond stood alone amongst the piled corpses. Go ahead, he typed. I will see you again, I'm sure. She cut his head off. Her wrists hurt. She was hungry. She was alone there in the enormous woodland cottage, and she still had to haul the BFG 10K back to Fahrenheit Island. Lucy? Yeah, I'm almost back there. Hang on. I respawned in the arse end of nowhere. Lucy, do you know who's in the cottage? Those noobs that we kill? What? Hell no. Noobs. Someone's butler. I don't know. Jesus, that spawn gate. Girls. Little girls in Mexico. Getting paid $1 a day to craft shirts. Except they don't get their dollar when we kill them. They don't get anything. Oh, for Christ's sakes, is that what one of them told you? Do you believe everything someone tells you in game? Christ, English girls are so naive. You don't think it's true? No, I don't. Why not? I just don't, okay? I'm almost there. Keep your panties on. I've got to go, Lucy, she said. Her wrists hurt and her podge overlapped the waistband of her trousers, making her feel a bit like she was drowning. What, now? Shit, hang on. My mom's calling me to supper. You're almost here, right? Yeah, but... She reached down and shut off her PC.
Well, there you have it. Thank you very much for tuning in. Next week, I'll have the exciting conclusion. And after that, I'll be podcasting another story called Human Readable. That's a story that's going to be much longer than this one, 8 or 9 installments, I think. It's one that I'm very proud of. It originally appeared in Future Washington, a great anthology that was out earlier this year. I hope you like it as much as I did. Good night.